Good afternoon again. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you have tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people who, to me anyway, are lifting and participating in a huge shift going on in human consciousness at this time in history. And a very powerful one is with us today, Barbara Hand Clow, who wrote The Pleiadian Agenda, The Mind Chronicles, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, Chiron, and her latest is The Mayan Code, Time Acceleration and Awakening of the World Mind. So, Barbara, welcome to the show.
Hi, Veronica. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. So you're in my hometown, huh?
And I'm close. Yeah. I'm up in Vancouver, British Columbia. Where are you?
And that was from my home. That's my hometown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
hey.
I'm in Bellingham. We're not very far apart.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's see now. Your work holds such a strong awareness of the flow of intelligence through the cosmos. I wanted to know, before we get into 2012 and all the questions we want to talk to you about today, how did you awaken, how did you open to having this awareness of these streams of consciousness?
Well, I'm one of those people who was lucky enough to have never been shut down as a child.
Oh, marvelous.
And so, and the reason for that was not my parents, but my grandparents. My grandfather was half Cherokee, and then my grandmother was Celtic from the Hebrides and from Wales.
Oh, what a good combination.
Actually, it's very common for Cherokee people to marry Celtic people because their traditions are actually very compatible. And so what was wonderful is when I was a little child, my grandparents, my grandfather in particular, felt that I should receive special training. And so they had me up to their place in Bay City, Michigan, 3 weekends out of four. I lived in Saginaw, which was like 8 miles away. And so they managed to make sure that I didn't shut down. And they especially worked with me when I first went to public school, like in the first and second grade.
And did they recognize that you, I mean, would you say that you were born with a gift?
I think my grandfather felt that was true, yeah.
And they recognized it in you at a young age?
Yes, yeah.
And did your siblings also have it?
Not as far as I can see or as far as anybody said.
Well, so it is...
My brother, Bob, you know, as you know, is married to Diana at Wise Awakenings. And my brother, of my siblings, the other person who is really gifted with a really strong Native American presence is my brother, Bob. But he was not trained as a child. He wishes that he had been. But the way it goes in Cherokee tradition is it always passes from a male to a female teacher and then from a female to a male. And so my grandfather chose not to train any of his children, and including my father. And instead, he chose to train me. So I was really very lucky as a child.
Well, that's sort of interesting, isn't it?
So I never shut down, and my biggest problem was when I started to go to public school and started to get into American society, I had a lot of problems orienting myself. But I managed.
Well, tell me this. Have you always sort of seen things, heard things, and lived in a kind of a symbolic reality?
I just am not shut down from other worlds, and so when there's information that's available, it's quite easy for me to grasp it. If anything, the biggest problem I have is an information overload. And then I also was taught to operate first from feelings and secondly from rationality. And so I do think life is easier for everybody if they operate from feelings first.
That's not so common.
Yeah, I kind of start with feelings, and then I watch what's going on, and then I use my logical brain to comprehend things as best I can.
Well, I've really enjoyed the Mayan Code, but I can't tell you that I've been able to integrate all that I have learned so far. So I'm so I know that you have information overload, because I really enjoyed the load.
Yeah, and of course, that's an amalgam of my own research in other books, such as The Pleiadian Agenda and Catastrophobia and Alchemy. And so there, first of all, are like three bodies of my own material in a relatively short book. And then the other research that's in the Mayan Code is the research of Dr. Carl Coleman. So it's a combination of three fields that I've studied, one of them post the issue of us being a traumatized species because of Earth changes.
Yeah, another that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's Catastrophobia. And then the Pleiadian Agenda and Alchemy are both works on multidimensionality. And then I'm also an astrologer.
So are you a channel for the Pleiadians?
Oh, I am on occasion. I don't like to channel, though. I'm in touch with them all the time, and I receive information from them. But when you channel, you kind of go out of yourself, and you allow things to come in, and I prefer to stay conscious.
I see.
So I tend to be able to be conscious in this reality and also with other realities converging.
Well, that's very practical, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the only one that I channeled was the Pleiadian Agenda, and that's because it was just such a scientific data bank, which I didn't understand at the time.
Hmm. So, wow, that's very interesting, actually. So what the Mayan code is about is the Mayan calendar bringing us to the point of 2012, which I see is 2011, and Dr. Kalaman also called it that, didn't he?
Right.
And so I wondered if you could explain to people, I guess what I'd like to see is the underworld, all the level, is the underworld the same as levels of consciousness? And there are all these different ways in which there's time acceleration, so more is happening in a smaller period of time, but you've designated what consciousness evolution has gone on in which phase and so on. I wonder if you could explain the word underworld, the way you use it.
That's a word that Carl Kalaman uses because that's the word that the Mayans use. Mm-hmm. And that's the word that they use for nine different periods of time that are developing on our planet, and the periods of time become progressively shorter. So the longest underworld is 16.4 billion years. And then each underworld is divided by 20. Hmm. And so Carl's insight, that's just Mayan research, but Carl's major research was that he could see that each one of these underworlds represents an acceleration of evolution.
Hmm.
And so the first underworld, that really long one, is just basically cosmological. But when we get to the second underworld, if you divide 16.4 billion years by 20, which is the way all the Mayan systems work, they always work with divisions and multiplications times 20 instead of 10.
Mm-hmm.
If you divide 16.4 billion years by 20, you get 820 million years.
Hmm.
And Kalaman is a biologist, and he realized that that represented the development of species and the development of life forms on our planet, the actual evolution of living creatures.
Hmm. When you said cosmological, I needed to have an explanation what that means.
Well, 16.4 billion years is quite close to the date that science is giving to the Big Bang.
Oh.
They're still waffling on that. But if we look at 16.4 billion years of time since the Big Bang, then our solar system, the sun and planets, did not form until about 4.5 billion years ago.
So it's just like everything kind of evolving and morphing and changing. And
yeah, so that first underworld is basically an evolution of cosmology, which we don't know that much about. We know quite a bit, but we don't know that much. But when we get up to the 820 million year underworld, the second underworld, we know a lot about the evolution of biological species. And so what Kalaman recognized is that the Mayans somehow recognized that particular number, which is amazing in itself. And then he then turned around and used their techniques for dividing the underworlds. The other thing that goes on with these nine underworlds is each one of them functions in 13 phases. And when he divided the 820 million year underworld, he discovered that the Mayans also knew the various dates for the really critical changes in the evolution of animals and hominids and all that. Like, for example, the date is exactly the same as for the beginning of the Cambrian, which is a period when many, many life forms evolved on this planet. So Kalaman, the reason normally I write about my own stuff, but the reason that I spent so much time doing research on his work was that I feel like he's the person who has figured out what the Mayan calendar means. It's one thing to kind of know the dates and understand those issues, but I've been a calendar researcher for 30 years, and I also was a publisher of many of the main calendar writers, such as Jose Arguelles and John Jenkins and different ones. And I never felt that any of them really figured out what it actually meant. Some of them got pretty close. Arguelles definitely did. But I finally feel that here we are in 2007 at this point, and as of about 2001, I really think that Carl Kalaman has figured this out.
Well, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's really exciting because the calendar seems to reflect evolutionary stages of ourselves through being mammals and then through being hominids and then through being early man, Paleolithic man, and then finally up to where we are now, which is galactic consciousness. And the calendar actually seems to track this very accurately. And if more and more people understand that this is what's going on with this calendar, then this gives us the opportunity to actually contemplate our own evolution. In other words, we are a species who is in a position now to contemplate our own evolution from the beginning of time.
You know, and also to create more of it, like to create it consciously at this point?
Well, as we get up to the latter underworlds, if we come up to more recent times, one of the underworlds starts in 3116 BC, mm-hmm. which is like 5,125 years ago. Then the next one is 256 years ago because you divide it by 20. Then the next one started in 1999. So we're in a time acceleration factor, which at this point is extremely rapid, which I think can be seen by what's going on out there. I think this does a lot to explain Blackberries and cell phones and just all the crazy levels of communication and linkage that we're all dealing with.
So these underworlds are actually reflective of the physical vibratory experiences that we're all having.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Okay. And when I go out and teach this, I've obviously taught my own material for many years, and people resonate quite a bit with it. But when I've gone out and taught this particular material, people just go, yes, that's it.
Hmm.
But the thing of it is, it's not simple. This is a complicated idea.
No, we had Dr. Kalaman on not very long ago,
yeah.
And it is complicated.
It's very complicated.
I can't just rephrase what he talked about.
Oh, I know. And it's very complicated, but at the same time, what's interesting is it's probably the most complicated thing that I've ever taught.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the ability of people to understand it is at a very, very high level if they just take some time to think about it.
Because they're moving too fast not to, in a way.
Well, mm-hmm. But there must be something true about it. Because in my case, this is a very radical idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I take on an idea, then I watch to see if it's true, and I watch to see if things check out. And what I'm noticing is the way this is catching on and the way people are resonating with it, I think is part of its own verification.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I'm going to jump back a little bit to something that you wrote. 11,500 years ago, there was a huge cataclysm. And there's a line that you said was, what happened has been causing our consciousness to deteriorate. We
right.
have to recover the memory of what that was.
Right.
Can you speak about that?
Yeah, that's coming from Catastrophobia, which I wrote and was published in 2001. Called Catastrophobia, The Truth about Earth Changes. And it was really great that I had already written that book because in order to write the Mayan code, that piece, I needed to take that piece and turn it into five pages, which is five pages that you obviously caught on to. Because the point of Catastrophobia is that 11,500 years ago, we suffered a cataclysm in our solar system and on the Earth. And that cataclysm made us into a multi-traumatized species. And it's not just the cataclysm itself, but it's also the thousands of years of survivalism after the cataclysm.
So this grubbing for our life.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I believe very, very strongly, having been brought up with an indigenous point of view, is I believe that before that cataclysm, we had a very open multi-dimensional consciousness. So one of the things that I'm teaching, in this case, Jerry and I teach together, my husband Jerry, who's a polarity therapist and a cranial sacral
therapist. I've had Jerry work on me. He's a wonderful, wonderful
Okay,
worker.
So you know about Jerry. So
That's
we
true.
Work together because he's working as a body healer, and then I'm, of course, working as a person who's working with historical records. And so one of the things that... I just lost my train of thought.
Well, I was just going to ask you, the
yeah.
body work, I mean, the historical records are literally in our bodies, aren't they?
Yeah, and see, the idea here would be that we all still have a memory of this period before 11,500 years ago when we weren't closed down. And so I kind of have a kind of interesting role that I'm playing here because I never got shut down. And so I don't have that problem, and yet I can so easily see what people are struggling with. And so then what happens is in every lifetime, and of course I believe we have multiple lifetimes, what happens is this inner traumatic memory tends to continue within ourselves, and new trauma tends to get attached to it.
And you think that's why our world can get pretty seedy right now?
Well, I certainly think it explains a lot about the outrageous level of evil and violence that we're living with.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has an interesting spin to this idea of time acceleration. Because if Kalaman is right, that we're accelerating 20 times 20 times 20 as we go through this process, then if he's correct, then what's happening right now is all of that multi-traumatized material from the past is hitting us in the face right now.
Okay.
And I think it's the only thing that explains things like what's happening in Iraq, for example. I'm stunned every day by the barbarism and the level of violence that people are capable of. It's just incredible at this point in our evolution.
Hmm.
And yet, if we really are processing all of these thousands and hundreds of years of past experience, then it makes sense that this is happening.
Well,
and
I know
that it's coming to an end pretty soon, too. It's another issue.
Oh, good. Well, I have several approaches on this. The section on unity and duality consciousness, you talk about three sections of the underworld where we're enlightened or have been enlightened, right?
Right.
So they're three separate sections.
Yeah.
So was it always trauma that ended those?
That's dealing with brain orientation, and I actually didn't deal with that. There are some subjects in Kalaman's work that I felt he covered so well that I just basically mention them but don't explain them.
Mm.
And so he's got a whole lot of material on brain orientation and then the way our consciousness functions in unity or duality based on the actual way that our brain is functioning. And I completely agree with him. It's just that I don't feel too confident about discussing that because I didn't cover that.
Okay. But you do believe that there have been times in our history where we have been more, is the word enlightened or more magical?
Yeah.
Or more?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, is that before this cataclysm and for basically over 100,000 years, the Paleolithic period is called the regional underworld. And it goes from 100,000 B.C. to 2011, through 2011. And the Paleolithic period is a time that we had unity consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really, really interesting idea for me because I also have another line of research that I have been doing for years that relates to getting into the Paleolithic mind. And I've done that in two ways. First of all, I've done 100 sessions under hypnosis into my past lives. And that's the material of the Mind Chronicles, which is another book here. By the way, both those books got published this year.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
oh,
the Mind Chronicles came out in February, and the Mayan Code came out in May.
Uh-huh.
And the initials for both one of them are MC, and so we've just started calling them MC Square. So the Mind Chronicles, time travels through 100,000 years of human consciousness.
Oh.
So when I did the research for the Mind Chronicles, I went into a number of experiences in the past where I had unity consciousness. So I already felt really comfortable with that idea, and then the other
thing... Can you recover unity consciousness by going through the hypnotic?
Yeah, so the other way to recover it, because I certainly was experiencing that in sessions, and once you discover it, then you tend to move toward it just automatically because it's so much... of a wider view of reality.
Hmm.
But the other way that I've gotten in touch with that is by doing ecstatic body postures.
Hmm.
So last year I offered some classes at Wise Awakening on ecstatic body postures.
I took them.
Yeah, because this is based on the research of Felicitas Goodman, the anthropologist. And she has discovered a way to go back into ancient times, including the Paleolithic, by means of working with body postures. And so that's another very, very easy access for people. And also, Veronica, I think what's going on is I think the generation of people out there listening who are about 40 and under,
mm-hmm.
they actually are much, much more in touch with people with unity consciousness than people who are older.
Hmm.
And the way you can see this is they're very tribal. You can see this with the tattoos and the various ways they're working with their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think unity consciousness is definitely awakening again at this time.
Hmm. How interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we want. So let's talk about, let's see now. I was wanting to talk about things like the ecstatic trance, the ecstatic body postures, but maybe you've covered that. It seems mm-hmm. to me I keep understanding like streams of consciousness coming through us all,
mm-hmm.
and you're actually tapping into what they have to say and where we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about two things. One is, I have three things here, days and nights of the galactic underworlds. Are you interested in talking about that, or is that more...
Yeah, as I said, the nine underworlds are like stacked on top of each other,
okay.
and all nine of them are all evolving toward 2011.
Okay.
So one of the really tricky things about this idea is all of these levels of consciousness are still evolving, and they're still affecting us. And then each one of the nine underworlds is divided into 13 heavens. So these are both Mayan words. And then the 13 heavens divide into days and nights. So there are 7 days and six nights. And to discuss this on the on the radio is pretty tough because it involves so many numbers and so many periods of time. But each one of those nine underworlds is divided into 7 days and six nights. And then those 7 days and six nights explain how those underworlds are evolving.
So but they're all evolving simultaneously?
They're all evolving simultaneously. So right now at the current moment, now remember I told you one of the underworlds starts in 1999.
Right.
That's the eighth underworld called the Galactic. So the eighth underworld started in 1999, and then every 360 days we've had another day or another night. So right now we are finishing day five, and we're going into night five. And so day five had to do with what's called the advanced unifying synthesis, which has to do with a whole new creation coming through, which I actually think is happening and I can see it. But this is going so fast and it's so complicated that people are having a great deal of difficulty understanding how this is working.
It's better to understand it intuitively than logically, probably.
Well, what I did in the Mayan code is I spent most of the time in the Mayan code on that particular issue, attempting to see how this concept is affecting us now, especially 1999 to through 2011. So two of the chapters are devoted just to that issue alone. And so one thing that's important to understand is because each one of these underworlds is stacked on top of the previous one, then we can go back into the underworld before the galactic underworld, which started in 1755. And that one is called the, I call it the industrial underworld, and Carl calls it the, I forget what he calls it right now. But it starts in 1755, and it charts the evolution of industry and the evolution of technology. And so we can take the end of day five of the galactic, where we are right now, and we can go back to the corresponding date in the underworld before this one, the one that rules industry, and we get 1929.
Oh, my.
Now, that ought to wake a few people up right there.
That means that the same impulse is going on, the same...
Well, what it means is that when we see things like the liquidity crisis and the financial problems, it's telling us to take it seriously. So one of the really amazing thing about Kalaman's idea is how you can analyze history and how you can look at the past in relationship to the current moment. So one of the reasons I was the logical one to try to put this all together is because I had already done all that research on past life regression and had done so much work on the different layers of time for so many years. So the reason I'm kind of the person who came in like this is because, number one, Kalaman says that we are awakening right now and we're moving toward enlightenment.
Right.
Well, the Pleiadian agenda and alchemy of nine dimensions says the same thing, and it also teaches how to achieve that. Because I'm not really very interested in anything unless it gives me, gives me something that I can use. I'm actually pretty practical. I'm not really up there in the ideal world as much as it might seem. And yet what I notice about us as humans is if we don't understand why something works the way it is, we basically don't function very well.
Right. I agree with that.
Yeah. So I've kind of tried to put together a good explanation of why it's working the way it is and then really got into what we can do with that information.
Well, so what I want to ask you another question, which might be a little bit lighter, because I would like you to address...
Yeah, this is heavy stuff. That's one thing people used to say, like, Barbara Marciniak and I are good friends, and I used to be her publisher, and she's the author of Bringers of the Dawn and all those wonderful Pleiadian books. And people used to kid about how Barbara was school, but I was graduate school. Because I'm not a simple, there's no way I'm a simple writer, and yet I think that what I'm saying is quite understandable.
Well, I like your idea of giving us something to do, but just taking it to a lighter was not meant to be disrespectful.
I really fully agree with you. I think the sooner you move to the lighter, it's better, because not that many people will necessarily understand these many ideas as quickly.
Well, talk about day sign. You're an astrologer, so can you give us a few pointers on that, and what can a person do with his or her day sign?
Well, the Mayan, the indigenous Mayans in Guatemala and Mexico have been keeping the day calendar for like 2,500 years. And it has 13 numbers and like 20 archetypes or 20 signs. And so on any given day, I think today is 3 Ahau. On any given day, we have a number combined with a concept or combined with an archetype. And so at the end of the Mayan code, I gave the information on how to detect your own birth sign and how to watch the calendar day by day. Because doing that offers you information very much in the way that astrology does. It takes you to a more archetypal and symbolic level, and it just gets you out of the everyday run-of-the-mill kind of way of looking at life.
It gave it a flow, gives it a flow with some kind of...
Yeah, and any divination system does that. I mean, tarot would do that, or scrying, or whatever you want to pick out. I think spending a certain amount of our time moving out of just the everyday 3D clock time is a very good thing for us. I think we get a lot of meaning out of that. Or something like medicine cards, you know, like keeping track when you see a squirrel or when you see a skunk, keeping track of what that means when it appears for you.
Exactly. Well, I spent a few minutes just getting my own day sign. That's about as complex as I got, but I thought people might be interested in that.
Did you get it?
Yeah, I got serpent.
Yeah, so you got it right there. You want to read that and see if your listeners think it fits you?
Yeah.
I don't know if they know me well enough,
but yeah, it says that basically that I'm magical. Magical powers mean maybe a very spiritual sign, but with powers that easily may be abused. So I have to be careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an intelligent Eastern sign, and I was of the East in the Native divination as well.
Mm-hmm.
That may be electrifying with new incoming energy. Through sincere willingness to serve others, serpents may be open to expand their hearts. This sign holds authority. Serpents are flexible, even fluid, till they're caught in a corner where they may explode. Serpents with a poisonous temper may poison themselves and others by creating oppressive or even destructive attitudes. But I thought that was, is it sort of
does
just
it
like...
Does it fit for you?
A little bit, yeah. Quite a bit.
Because what's interesting is sometimes when you ask somebody's partner, they can really say it fits. It's like
what
astrology
do you think,
is like that, you know?
Yeah, but it's just interesting. I didn't realize that there was that, so that was just fun to mention to people that at the back of your book is an ability to...
Yeah, what I did is I put, the book has 4 appendices, and one of them is working with your day sign. Another one is all the astrological transits at the end of the calendar.
Yeah, I didn't get time to read that, but
yeah,
I will
the do. Reason I did that is, of course, in the long run, the thing that I've done the most consistently my whole life is astrology, and I'm not reading people's charts right now because I'm doing macro astrology on my website, HandCloud 2012.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and so if people go to handcloud2012.com, there's a free new moon analysis, like the new moon's tomorrow, and there's a free reading for the equinoxes and solstices, and it's really kind of cool stuff. So I've done astrology for years. It's just that I'm not reading natal charts at this time, you know.
Okay, so could they get their day sign, the Mayan day sign, on your chart?
It's not on my website. I'm only doing astrology on my website. But it's,
and your website again is HandCloud?
HandCloud2012.com.
HandCloud, C-L-O-W, 2012.com.
Yeah, so the Mayan day signs are at the end of the book, and the astrological analysis is at the end of the book. And the reason that I did the astrology was I decided that when I was doing the book, I decided if Kalaman is right about this idea, then the astrology ought to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Because after all, for 40 years of my life, when I analyze things astrologically, it definitely shows a lot about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I operated with the premise that if he was right, the astrology should show it. And it's awesome.
Is it?
Once I saw what was going on, I did 1999 through 2011 with some preliminary stuff before that. There were a few transits before that that kind of kicked into it, so I covered them. And it's like this amazing drama is going on in the sky. It's just incredible.
Really?
Information. So that's in there too. And another thing that's in the appendices is a technique for helping you handle the galactic underworld, which is 1999 through 2011. Because most people are having a really, really hard time with how fast things are going.
That's really fast.
Yeah, and then according to Kalaman, in February 2011, things are going to go 20 times faster than they have been since 1999.
So we just have to get roller skates, eh?
Well, that's why I think people need this information, because a lot of people that we've been working with are doing better with the time acceleration now that they understand what's going on. People have just felt like they were completely crazy.
Exactly. I agree with that. Many people are like that. But also you talk about the ending of the Earth quarantine in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of this time as well, isn't it? So that's a bigger picture.
Yeah. What happens in the... This is from my own analysis of the calendar. As I get up to 2008, 2009, 2010, what I did in the book is I attempted to predict what will be going on based on this theory, which is, of course, a pretty risky thing to do. But I turned in the manuscript the summer of 2006, and everything I said about the rest of 2006 and 2007 has turned out to be true. And so I'm actually beginning to take this very seriously myself. So one of the things that I can see by analyzing the calendar is that peace is going to come to Jerusalem and the Holy Land around August or September of 2008.
Wonderful.
Now, when I wrote that, the Israelis were bombing Lebanon, and that was a totally outrageous idea. And since the book came out, actually, there's been a lot more movement toward peace. So then as we get into 2009-2010, I can see evidence for like contact with the universe and going beyond being a planet that's separated from the universe. And that's called exopolitics. There actually is a field of study out there with scientists working on it that's called exopolitics, and it has to do with the issue of our place in the universe itself. So the book is positing that we are going to go back into what enlightenment is all about, is being part of the universe again.
And we have been quarantined because?
Because we are a multi-traumatized, incredibly violent species.
Okay.
The people on the Earth are so violent that their energy cannot go out into space. And by the way, the really interesting stuff behind this is one of the reasons why the space programs are failing.
What is?
Well, we are not going to be allowed to go out and control and contaminate space. There are other beings in the universe that are affected by this, and it's not going to be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, I mean, this is a risky book.
Mm-hmm. Part of it was quite not traumatizing. I know that we're expecting cataclysmic events, all right? But I know that. But the way Dr. Kalaman talked and the way your book talks, I wonder what we can do to ease or offset some of the things that can happen in order to break out of the Earth.
Well, first of all, I want to separate myself out a little bit from a lot of people who are talking about cataclysms, because I have not done that, and I'm still not doing that. And what I'm talking about is emotional cataclysms. You know, in other words, there's a lot of people out there predicting the end of the world and Earth changes and all that.
Right.
And that's really not what I'm saying. What I'm looking at is mostly the emotional consequences of moving back to enlightenment and moving back beyond being a traumatized species. So I just want to clarify that, because a lot of the Earth changes that are going on right now, such as weather changes, are actually man-caused. You know, some of it is, at least.
Right.
And so there's that issue of, okay, well, you're causing it, then why do you think it's happening to you? You might look at for example, the largest polluter on the planet, the largest destroyer of human resources and creator of pollution is the United States military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at the damage being caused by the manufacturing and transport of weapons and people all over the world, it's incredibly destructive. You know, so it's like it's kind of time to forget about Earth changes and look at who's the real destroyer, you know?
But the thing that concerns a lot of us is that if we know that, and if we know that things are being squeezed right now, everything's going faster and people have, like, hotter emotional buttons and so on.
Yeah.
How do we then take action? Is it simply going back in and centering ourselves and evolving and breathing and...
No, it's much more practical than that.
Good.
First of all, if you were a stock trader or a person who was having a problem holding onto your house right now,
mm-hmm.
what does it tell you when the corresponding date in the previous underworld is 1929?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that this material gets into, there's a deep analysis in Kalaman and Clough regarding war, regarding movements of people, regarding resources and ecology and everything like that. Because we have got to wake up. we cannot go on the way we've been going on this planet. And the biggest, again, the biggest destroyer of energy and resources, and after all, what about all of the people who are coming back without arms and legs from Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to take care of them, you know? So the book, this is a really practical, we have to, for example, be much more careful about spending. We've got to be much more careful about being in debt. We've got to be prepared to pull together more strongly in our own families. It's time to stop all the separation and divorce and wreckage in families, you know. And if people start to realize how serious this situation is, I actually think a lot of people will change, and I actually think a lot of people are changing.
I think people are being impulsed to change, are they not?
I don't think they have any choice.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry and I went out and started lecturing and teaching this material a couple of years ago. We warned people in Bellingham over and over and over again and everywhere else about getting out of debt and stopping spending money and simplifying. And for those people who didn't listen, well, the problems are going to come home to roost, you know? But I still think having that information now is better than not knowing anything at all.
Well, let's go back to, I appreciate that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back into, say, the military causing the huge, or being the greatest polluter.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do about that? Is it about the election of 2008, or how do we do the groundswell?
This is a really tough one, Veronica,
yeah.
because what happened to the United States is time stopped September 11th, 2001. And I don't mind saying on the radio or anywhere else that our government either caused 2001 or they actually did it themselves, connected probably with a couple of other agencies on the planet. And so according to polls that I read 6 months ago, 65% of the American public know that the government either did it or was involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, I think I got that out of USA Today. So we're in the middle of a massive waking up right now and getting real.
It's a revolution in consciousness.
We've
isn't
got
it?
To see, you know, America is over in Iraq fighting for democracy,
mm-hmm.
when there's no democracy at home, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And so it's about reading and studying and being informed, and people just have to wake up now.
Isn't consciousness like moving through us? I remember being taught like 30-odd years ago that mm-hmm. consciousness is rising in humanity at such a rate, and it is going to rise in people in the military as well as anywhere else.
And it is, by the way. There's a big movement in the military against what's going on.
Great.
Having their own children and themselves being just used as fodder, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot going on. It's just that there's a big cover-up over the top of the whole thing.
Not even supported when they get home.
Yeah. And then where my own work comes in, let's get into the Pleiadian agenda and
yeah.
alchemy a little bit, because
please.
That's a major part of this. What Jerry and I are teaching when we teach workshops is how to use our minds and how to use consciousness to change our personal lives and change reality.
Excellent.
And so as we become more multidimensional, which is just something that's happening to, it's an interesting thing because it's happening to people whether they know it or not. It's just that it's a lot easier if you understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start working in a multidimensional way, what happens is you start to understand that everything that you think about is actually creating reality and actually affecting things. And that, of course, goes to things in a simpler level, to things like The Secret. But when you really fully understand that what's in your mind is creating what's out there, you start to watch out for what's in your head. And so I think a lot of people are starting to seriously consider buying into all of these lies and buying into all this mind control information, because the reality outside of ourselves is exploding because people have not taken responsibility for their own thoughts and minds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have to monitor our feelings and what's in our minds. And there's going to be a critical leap here where enough people are thinking clearly about what's going on, and it just won't be possible for them, you know, the global elite, to continue to get away with this.
So it's just having huge numbers of people that's going to make the difference.
Yeah, and also it's a practice every day. Like when I see George Bush on television saying, "We do not torture," with a look on his face that looks like he just wet his pants, excuse me, if you know what I mean, a
yes.
silly grin.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I slow down and I just say to myself on all levels of my consciousness, you are a liar and we don't agree with you and you are going to have to stop it. And I spend a lot of my time doing that. Hmm. I don't accept that. I don't accept people like Cheney having any power over me or anybody else, you know?
What do you think about not watching TV? Do you think people should pay attention or not?
I think you have to deal with TV on a highly conscious level. And I only allow myself to watch TV for 1/2 hour a day, which is one American news program, because I have to keep track of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watch it, I observe all of my thoughts, and I analyze everything they say on TV and decide when I take it in whether it's true or not. Because there is some information on TV that's true, but a huge amount of it is manipulation.
Mm-hmm. How do we teach people that intuitively?
People are going to have to study and wake up. I mean, like, for example...
But you can't just study with your intellect. You have to have a sense.
You have to feel, too. Like, for example, the most important thing that's going on in the world right now has to do with how much torture and suffering there is for the Iraqi people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what should be on TV. And finally, last night, by the way, on the evening news, I actually saw a show about how much the Iraqi people are suffering. It's the
really?
First one.
Who did the show?
Yeah, it's the first one I see.
Who did it? Who's
it was on ABC. I usually watch ABC because they're the least offensive one.
Hmm.
Sometimes NBC. It could have been NBC last night. But what I'm getting at is, if I am going to watch a news program, I have it in my mind what is really important that day. And then I just watch to see whether they cover it or not.
Hmm.
Because major, major stuff is going on this planet right now.
Mm-hmm. And it isn't all in the news. I know that.
I read a lot of newspapers, by the way.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah, I read a lot of newspapers, because that way I don't have to fight the mind control of the television. I can be reflective while I read.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep track of current events to the top of the line, because my website, my analysis of the new moon and the equinox and solstices is political.
Hmm.
And I use it as a coaching device to help people for what's going on, because this is really tough.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to live in a world when these kinds of things are going on.
So what we're seeing is that we're coming to 2012, which is a time where, if we're going to come out of quarantine in the universal government or system, right? We have to have dealt with that polarity stuff that makes us kill each other. And
yeah, we need to become people of peace. And we will not be part of the universe as a whole, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the multidimensional field, until we become peaceful. So I just spend huge amounts of my time meditating on that and also speaking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to speak their minds. What is going on is absolutely outrageously offensive.
Mm-hmm.
How could the United States have ever gotten to this point?
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
I agree. And yes.
Yeah.
But
my relatives go back in our families, Jerry's side and my side, we go back to 1630.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're real American patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on is just absolutely outrageous. But people have to feel that. They have to really, really see it that way.
Yeah. I think many are doing that at this time, but also the way you're talking about even the global torturous memory, pain, post-trauma stress that we have as a species. That's also what we're dealing with, right?
Yes, that's right.
And I suppose having the biggest budget, America used to have the biggest budget, right?
Yeah.
They're the ones.
Well, and that's where each one of us really needs to take responsibility for our personal healing.
Yeah.
And so we need to do what we can regarding, you know, body work or therapy or art therapy or whatever. Or just, you know, I find the most healing thing for me in the middle of this mess is nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm spending a lot of time just when I can just getting out into nature and just tuning into the plants and the animals. Because the difference between humans and all of the plants and animals and everything else on the planet is they don't participate in this crazy mess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like dogs don't have to worry about a rock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They can just lie down on the porch and take a nice nap.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tune into them a lot because they make me feel peaceful. And have you ever had an animal look at you and you can almost tell that the animal is wondering what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, because they can see that field of confusion and consciousness around you, you know.
Right, and they're so incredibly loving.
Yeah.
So actually the game is, for 2012, the game is to get healed enough that we can release the post-trauma stress from 150,000 or 2 million years.
Well, it's not in 2012, though. That's what we're doing right now, and that's mm-hmm. what we've been doing heavily, really, for about the last 50 years. So
okay.
So one of the big differences between Kalaman's theory and my adaptation of it and some of the other calendar researchers is notice that difference between 2011 and 2012.
Okay.
So first of all, what happens with this is time acceleration completes itself in 2011. But then during 2012, there are all these amazing astrological configurations that show us being in a very, very high state of consciousness. And so the way I look at it is we can't experience 2012 in the way we need to without the time acceleration completing during 2011.
Okay.
So that may straighten out that differential there, because it isn't about the calendars ending on different dates, really. Although Kalaman has found some evidence that the Mayans actually end that phase of the calendar in 2011. That stuff is really just kind of detailed stuff. But the idea, the reason I like Kalaman's research so much is that he is really good at showing how we've been doing it right now, and we've got to do it. And what I mean do it is heal. We've got to work on the healing and work on the emotional issues, you know, every day of the week, all the way up through 2011.
Well, Barbara, is it not getting faster? Is it not getting more rapid as more people do, and then we resonate one with the other with an expanding?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because in my analysis of the new moon last month, the Virgo new moon,
mm-hmm.
I could see a lot of evidence for multidimensional portals really opening up and really starting to affect us a lot.
That's good.
So we fortunately
for the good, right?
Well, yeah, we were out on the road in California, and we saw a lot of people because we were out teaching. And what I noticed with a lot of people is people just seem to have so much going on in their lives, like different changes, real estate transactions or relationships or whatever it is. And I started to realize, like, hey, the reason why things are so complicated for us right now is because all of these multidimensional levels are coming to us through all of these processes that we're in the middle of.
Mm.
You sort of following me?
Yes, I sure am.
And mm-hmm. so our oneness, in other words, oneness is about being connected to everything.
Right.
But in the short run, as all of that everything stuff comes into our lives, we're just like, whoa, you know?
I know, and the Internet, I think, has been a great metaphor, or actually a vibrational, it's taught us to think multidimensionally in a way, if you
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying.
Yeah, the Internet really reflects. Technology, I think, is just a reflection of where we are.
Right.
And I think what goes on in the Internet, and the way it's just getting bigger and bigger and more interconnected and all.
But I think it was like training wheels for our brain in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's just incredibly hard to handle it, because we still think in terms of the old time frames, and we still think in terms of things being material in a denser way than they actually are right now.
Tell me, do you think little teeny children think that way as well?
If you watch the children, that's always the way to understand reality.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've heard about the indigo children. And
oh, yes.
The children coming in who are really spiritual. And so if you look at the children, you can see that they're experiencing this in an entirely different way.
Mm-hmm.
For the children now, the children under 20 or whatever, under 15, the Iraq War and things like that, the old military thing, is going to be kind of an old relic to them, kind of the way 19th century, I don't know, I can't come up with a good example, but it's going to be the past for them.
Mm.
For us, it's a painful current reality, but it's going to be the past. And it actually is going to go away.
But they're ready. These children are ready to be I want that to go away. Thank you.
Well,
they're going
to
be ready.
Also, the children are really very multidimensional.
Yes.
So what happens for them is when you come up against the density of something like Iraq, they experience it as just a very dense, stupid thing.
Hmm. Are they going to be less violent and less, I mean, is it possible that they could come in with less violence, less trauma, less vehement angst than what we all had? Or
yeah, they
that
have. If you observe them, they have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, I get the greatest reports going on from people who are in schools, because educators just don't know what to do with them. They will not tolerate the kind of control and violence projected on them that we had to take as children. They just mm-hmm. won't take it.
Good.
Yeah.
So the evolution is very obvious, right?
Yeah, I think it is. And I had the Mayan code, chapter 8, is called Christ and the Cosmos.
Yes, I
and it deals with the issue of soul involution, which is actually a theory by another writer, Ian Lawton of England.
So involution?
Involution, okay. Yeah. And what it deals with, it deals with the idea, very interesting idea, that when we're at a critical leap point in evolution, where we're evolving into, where a change is happening in our species, which I believe where we are right now is we are going to stop Homo aggressus, which mm-hmm. is the violent human, and we're moving into Homo pacem, which is the man of peace. And so the idea in Chapter 8 is that beings of very, very high consciousness actually incarnate in us so that we can shift. And the idea would be that lots of angels have incarnated into these children.
Wonderful.
I know. And then what happens is school teachers just don't know how to mind control them and wreck them.
Correct.
It doesn't work.
But remember, we were always told the children would lead.
That is true because, they're the ones who are going forth in time. Those of us who are getting older, we're letting go.
One thing, this might we're almost done, and I don't want to leave us on a negative, but there's this whole thing about the sun flares and melting technology and all that.
Right. One of the things in the book is that when what I call the Bushites attempt to set up Star Wars, which they're working very, very hard to set up right now.
Lordy.
Yeah, they're really which Star Wars is just a system for blocking universal consciousness. Mm-hmm. And in the book, I'm just saying point blank that there's going to be a point where the solar flares are going to be very active, and they're going to blow the whole technology.
Do you think that has to happen, or can we offset that?
I think that if they put that technology in space, it has to be blown.
Right. I agree with that, but I'm just thinking, as I read it, I go, I believe we can move past this.
Well, it'd be nice if people quit spending all their money on it and quit trying to build it. That would be helpful.
Right. We need to do some fancy.
And some leaders in government, of course, are very opposed to it, but we just have America as empire pushing everything right now.
Right. Well, I'm praying that we all have an impact on the consciousness of our species and change that.
Oh, we do. Yeah.
Barbara, it's been wonderful talking to you. I'm excited. Your information is exciting. It's just titillating, and I need to do more reading, which I will do.
Yeah, this has been fun.
And your website, again, is handcloud2012?
Yeah, handcloud2012.com.
Great. And are you going to be giving a talk in Bellingham, or where are you going to be on the road tonight?
Let's see. As far as this area is concerned, I'm going to be at the Village Books on, November 3rd from 7 to 9 p.m.
Okay.
And then in Vancouver, we're going to teach a Pleiadian agenda activation November 9th and 10th.
All right, 9th and 10th, and that's in Vancouver. But that'll be on your website, will it?
Yeah, that's on the website and the contact numbers and all that stuff, yeah.
Well, many blessings, and thank you so much for our time together.
Well, thank you for, giving the support. I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.